and will be available on the City of Marion website. I ask elected members if they wish to foreshadow any declaration of interest in relation to any item on the agenda. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. There's been quite a flurry of emails going back and forth with staff and myself today in relation to the Housing Diversity DPA. The advice that I've received is that I do have an actual conflict of interest. However, it may not be relevant at this point in time. However, in the future, if we were, I'm noting that this is only going out to public consultation as opposed to going out, you know, as the approval of the DPA. However, my residential property is right in the pink zone on that particular map, which is the Appendix 2 to the Housing Diversity DPA. And I think due to the fact that there are significant changes to the proposed changes to the provisions within that zone and the ability to develop within that zone, I think it is prudent for me to actually not be part of that decision making. I do feel conflicted in actually being part of that decision making.
Do you mean tonight in what goes out for consultation or at the end of that process?
Both. Yep.
Rightio. So, members, I hope you've seen the advice provided by our governance manager, Ms. McKenzie, after she received verbal legal advice on how to approach the matter. And in a nutshell, we're safe to all stay in because of the reasoning that generally, even though we might all be affected by changes to the residential development zone across the whole city, the fact is that in each case there'll be a substantial class of residents affected. And we also note that this is a decision to put something out for community consultation. So it's not a final decision which actually changes people's rights. Okay, any others on the conflict of interest front? Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Worship. I declare a conflict of interest, a perceived conflict of interest in relation to the Oaklands Crossing due to my brother, and I'll stay for the item and deal with it in an open and transparent manner based on the merits.
Thank you, and thank you for your consistency on that point. Councillor Gard.
Sadly, Your Worship, I'm being somewhat inconsistent in that I did send an email to Ms. McKenzie this afternoon, and taking into account how you summarise that substantial class is a substantial class, it sways me in the direction of not stating or indicating a conflict. However, the grey area for me was that there is a property that I have an interest in indirectly in Glengowrie on Diagonal Road, and it at the moment there is an issue not between me and council but between me and a family member as to how much land we might apportion off the rear of that property. And so it's one of those cases where square meterage is going to count. So whether that puts me into a different position compared with the normal substantial class position is the question. And I'm open for guidance on that still.
Well, that is a very specific scenario. Ms. McKenzie, would you like to comment?
Through the Chair, the advice that has been received tonight is that members need to take into consideration the decision that's actually being made, which is directly relating to developing the documents for the purposes of public consultation. So if there was a conflict, it would be either an actual or perceived conflict at this point in time, as the detriment or the benefit in regards to the actual conflict would not be realised from the decision-making to date. Tonight, it will happen at a later date when the final DPA is actually resolved and therefore implemented.
So in that case, I think I can rest assured that there is no conflict in this round.
I see no problem with that based on that advice, and we can review the situation when this DPA comes back from community consultation and we're talking about actually changing zones in specific areas, even then it's a recommendation to the Minister, effectively, but we can review the situation. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. At this point in the agenda, I wouldn't mind declaring that I've had a previous conflict that I no longer have on a different item. So in regard to the Marion Sports Community Club lease, I've previously declared, when we've talked about Marion Sports, I've previously declared that with my son playing basketball at the site, I felt that I had a conflict. He no longer plays basketball at the site. So I just wanted to have that acknowledged.
Do we need to minute that? Wish it to be minuted?
I'd like to, since I've declared the conflict in the past and we'll be sitting in the chamber tonight. So
leave is sought for Councillor Pfeiffer's changed circumstances vis-a-vis the Marion Sports and Community Club to be noted in minutes. Is there any objection? Then leave is granted. So an appropriate note can be made, and Councillor Pfeiffer, while it's up on the board, I'll come back to you in a moment to see if you're happy with the wording. If there are no more for conflict of interest, move on to... Yes, sorry, Councillor Blescu.
Mentioned in motion R14 tonight, the Ombudsman report, so I'm not the scope of the report, but I mentioned, so I'll declare a perceived conflict.
Declaring a perceived conflict and you're staying in the meeting. We'll note the conflict and you're staying in the meeting for it? Or what do you...
I don't know, but I'll make an explanation at the beginning and decide accordingly, if that's okay.
Yes, you can decide at the time. That's fine. Or indeed at any stage through the debate, because sometimes it's not always obvious at the beginning. Now, Councillor Pfeiffer, do you want to give any more guidance in terms of scribing? And can we put at the end then? Site bracket, therefore a potential conflict of interest has ceased. And you can tidy up the Councillor Pfeiffer stuff in the first line as we go. Thank you. Communications then? Minutes. Would someone like to move as a block, the confirmation of the minutes of the last General Council and also the special General Council meeting? Councillor Hutchinson, seconded. Councillor Byram, good to have you back. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried. All those against, it's carried by majority. Communications. Someone like to move that those reports be received? Moved, Councillor Hull, second, Councillor Pryor, all those in favour. That's all those against. It's carried by unanimously, that one. Now, we have the opportunity, despite facing probably one of the longest council meetings of the year, potentially, we have the opportunity for verbal reports from elected members. That's no more than 13 times 3 minutes each, please. Who'd like to kick off? If there are none, we'll keep moving along. Point noted. Thank you, Councillor. And I thank all councillors for their forbearance, because we all have projects in our wards or the city that we're passionate about, but we'll let it go tonight. Now, I want to propose something to you in terms of the structure of the meeting. As you can see from the agenda, councillors, there are several matters that we have to get through. So several of them are actually potentially lengthy, particularly the housing diversity DPA. What I'm looking at, councillors, is some of the corporate reports which come up later in the meeting, which may be deemed uncontroversial, and I'm going to invite someone, if you see fit, to move them as a block, to actually just clear a few things off the agenda, because the likelihood is we probably won't reach them otherwise. Now, if you look at the moment, I'm just asking you to look at urban activation project and everything above that are deemed highly desirable to get through tonight. Items below that, potentially could wait, except for the leave for Councillor Crossland, and the Ombudsman report also needs to be dealt with tonight because there's actually a timetable that goes with that. He's been waiting a long time and he can wait a lot longer. Now, there are items within that we will want to extract. If any councillor has any question about an item, we will not include it in the block. Okay, so for example, Mitchell Park Sports Club, I think needs some discussion. Coastal Walking Trail Research Project, I think needs some discussion. So I'm suggesting that they not be moved on block. But if anyone has any others, I'm interested to know.
Yes, here from Marion Sports and Community Club.
Yes. So that's a reason for dealing with that issue, certainly. I'll just read them out. Marion Sports and Community Club lease, Hallett Cove Foreshore Master Plan Stage 4 Playground and Reserve Progress Report, Appleby Road Reserve Playground Final Design, State Local Government Infrastructure Partnership Marion Coastal Walkway Improvements Program, that's where we agree to take $200,000, shouldn't be a hard one. The monthly finance report and the monthly work health and safety report. I'm suggesting those items we could deal with on block, but if any member has any question, we'll pull them out, and there is no problem in doing so. Councillor Blesgood.
I can bring that up later, perhaps.
Okay. Well, I'll just ask the governance manager's advice. Do we need leave of the meeting to deal with those issues? I suppose we should, or it could just be a motion of any member, couldn't it? And now?
Yes, you can certainly do it through leave of the meeting to amend the agenda and deal with them now. The motion would need to be moved by members en bloc.
Yes, so first I seek leave of the meeting, which is sort of what I've been doing, to see if anyone objects to dealing with those matters that I read out en bloc and dealing with them now. If there's no objection, then I invite a member to move the recommendations as printed in relation to those items. Councillor Byram?
Yes, Your Worship, I would like to move them en bloc as listed.
Did you wish to speak to or highlight any points?
No, thank you, Your Worship.
Is that seconded? Councillor Gard, any comment?
No, Your Worship.
Very well. Does anyone want to highlight any points about any of those matters? Councillor Hull?
The work health and safety report on page 524. I note that we've got a graph that has two lines where there could possibly be four. There is an explanation for that at the bottom, but I just wonder whether that is accurate given recent advice.
Is that because there seems to be no 2016-17 figures?
17-18 figures.
Oh, there are no 2017-18 figures, right.
Yeah, through the chair, that is correct. To date, there is zero incidences, and that's why there is nothing recorded on the graph, because it's zero.
then to follow Councillor Hull's point, we need some graphical display, if we're going to have a graph with coloured lines like that, to indicate the success we're enjoying in having no injuries and having a flat line for the current financial year. Would that be something we can arrange? Well, if we can have something paper thin over the axis line that's in colour, then that will show that it's a zero for the period. But Councillor Hull, does that help you out?
Well, look, I'm not splitting hairs on that, but I given recent emails about staff, I won't go into the detail, is that correct? Is that absolutely correct?
Mr. Mifsud is saying that is correct, zero incidences this financial year. Injuries, right. Well, Mr. Mifsud.
Yes. Through the Chair, as at the end of July, it is 100% accurate.
Okay.
Which is what this report...
So, Councillor Telfer.
I would like to talk to the motions on page 336 to do with the Marion Sports and Community Club lease. I have made this one of my priorities. It's been many years in the coming, but particularly 3 years of work by both parties to come to a point where we are about to be able to offer a lease that is in legal terms that offers some security for our groups that play at Marion Sports and Community Club. We note in the report the amount of work that comes from the Marion Sports and Community Club. We note that at this point in time, we are hoping to entrust to the Marion Sports and Community Club the major part of the grounds, but the northern part, the basketball and the tennis and the croquet would be offered their separate leases. We also note that we are going to be pretty busy in the next year sorting out the car park and irrigation and some of the other important aspects that allow total usability of the Marion Sports and Community Centre. So Council is prepared to put its shoulder to this project and will work very hard to allow the whole variety of football, cricket, soccer, basketball, all those clubs, softball, tennis, so on, all a chance to use those facilities to their in fullness. So we just hope that this goes on and that we can build from here to allow all our sports teams to have facilities that we can be proud of.
Indeed, and there are a number of us who have been trying to push this along. When I arrived 2.5 years ago, Club Marion had some legitimate grievances about delays in correspondence, etc., but our land and property team has vastly improved since that time, and it's great that we're in a position where we're nearly ready to sign a lease. There will probably be ongoing legitimate debates about where and how much money should be spent on the site and by whom. But I'm encouraged by the fact that within our programs there is the potential for council helping to improve the site, and we do that whether we get thanks or not, because we're here to create benefit for the community. As indeed is the committee of the club. Having said that, any more debate on any of those items, Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, I have to speak against the recommendation in regards to Marion Sports and Community Club. And having said that, I have to note there are improvements.
Well, given that we've got a proposal on block, do you wish to move an amendment
No, I just think it's important for me to record on behalf of my community my objection to at least one part of neglected in the lease, and that relates to poker machines, Mr. Mayor. Now, there are some improvements in this lease, there's no doubt about that, in terms of the basketball, all those bits and pieces that have troubled us for a while. And maybe there will be some return back to council where we can put it aside for improvements going forward, which hasn't happened over the last 30 years in regards to basketball. But with poker machines, members would know that I would have hoped that for the next 21 years in this lease, there'd be something in there about weaning the club off the reliance on poker machine revenue and wean ourselves off the reliance of poker machine revenue. It's our facility. And most people I talk to in the community are quite surprised to know that council actually own two facilities that have poker machines. This one's the biggest one, 40 machines, the maximum. And I just think that this was the opportunity to get it right. Earlier in the term, we had Nick Xenophon here. He had representatives from the church and everything here trying to tell us that there is a problem, guys, in our society, in our communities, that needs to be addressed. We've passed up the opportunity here to introduce some weaning off poker machine income. And I'm disappointed by that, Mr. Mayor. Since that time, since that night, when we had all those representatives here, I was told that council would introduce some feedback for council in regards to this issue to make sure there is appropriate support for dependent people that are, apart from the club that is, that are actually using poker machines. None of that's come back. There's been no feedback. We've completely forgotten it and dropped the ball. Even though we had all that hype, this was the opportunity, Mr. Mayor, and we're letting it go. So for that reason, I can't support it. Everything else they do over there, I think, is a contribution to our community. But the taint of the scourge of poker machines at actually helping to fund this is repugnant and unacceptable in a modern society.
Any more points to add? Well, then I'll put the motion. Those in favour, raise your hand. That's the block item on all of those matters. In favour, all those against, carried by majority. Thank you. I've noticed one more that's probably uncontentious, the item 11 on page 241, committee recommendations of the, confirmation of the minutes of the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee meeting. Held 1st August. Moved, Councillor Byram. Seconded, Councillor Pfeiffer. All those in favour? All those against? That's unanimous. Thank you. Carried. Right. Now, I am look, with leave of the meeting, and I know it's what I'm trying to do, what I'm suggesting here to councillors, that we deal with the shorter items and leave the housing diversity at the end, and then we virtually take as long as we need to finish it. So if we could I have leave of the meeting that we deal with Councillor Crossland's leave of absence. Does anyone object to that, dealing with it now? I just want to say that Councillor Crossland, the Deputy Mayor, did ask me for leave prior to the last General Council meeting. But if you recall, we didn't finish the business of that meeting, and so we didn't get to it. Since then, we've had a special General Council meeting, and by email he sought leave from that as well. So I think the appropriate motion is that Councillor Crossland be given leave for the general council meeting of 8th of August, the special general council meeting 15th of August, the General Council meeting of the 22nd of August. And in terms of meetings we are definite about, that would cover his period of absence as planned. So move that way. Councillor Byrne, seconded Councillor Gard. Any questions or discussion, Councillor Appleby?
Can we go back in time?
We can, because the request was made before the meeting. So from that point of view, Ms. McKenzie, any problem? No problem from that point of view. I think, in fact, we can probably grant leave retrospectively anyway. But I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So we've dealt with that one. Now, members, could I take you to the urban activation project, and then I'm suggesting that we deal with the planning ones after that, sort of in reverse order according to the agenda. But I seek leave of the meeting to deal with the urban activation project, and I mean we do need a little bit of debate about this, but does anyone object if we deal with that now? Let me put it this way. I seek leave of the meeting to deal with items in the following order: urban activation project, establishment of council assessment panel, southern innovation area DPA, housing diversity DPA, and ombudsman report. What about Mitchell Park and then... Well, actually, Mitchell Park probably won't take that long, will it? So perhaps if we deal with Mitchell Park first, then urban activation project, council assessment panel, southern innovation area DPA, housing diversity DPA, and ombudsman report. So I'm seeking leave of the meeting that we deal with items in that order. Any objection? Then I have leave of the meeting, and therefore the next matter on the agenda is the Mitchell Park Sports and Community Centre project update. Before we go further, Mr. Skull, did you want to add anything initially?
To Mitchell Park?
In relation to the Mitchell Park project? No? Then I'll leave it to Councillor Telfer.
Just added an extra sentence to the fact that the report is noted, because you'll notice it's not a very fulsome report. So the second sentence that I've suggested to bring forward as a motion is refers the next strategic steps of the Mitchell Park Sports and Community Centre update project to the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee for robust planning detail and further initiatives. My concern is that if the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee pick up the work that was done by prior people, prior staff, there were a range of strategies and that they need to be looked at fully, and the expression of interest has not been discussed yet or fully brief to the ward members. The Mitchell Park was going to be the focus of, I think, the August strategy and infrastructure, so I'm hopeful that that will be happening very soon.
Very well. I can say it's urgent if you want to get it on the front page, anyway, the motion as it is in order. So is that seconded? Councillor Hutchinson, any comments? Any speakers against? Then question from Councillor Hull.
Member of the Infrastructure Committee, if this report tonight, even by the description of Councillor Telfer, is fairly scant, it's just a progress report. If there's nothing for the Infrastructure Committee to actually have more than this, what are we going to talk about?
Well, Councillor Hull, I think the very motion invites staff to adequately prepare for the meeting, and I expect you would find some more detail at the committee meeting. Councillor Telfer?
Through the Chair, we had a project officer working on Mitchell Park Sports and Community Centre, and so there is material that needs to come forward. We were going to notify the community. Those postcards were ready to go. There were other strategies. So I just want staff to dig out that material that already exists and bring it forward for us to look at.
Yes, it might have stalled a bit. If there are no other comments, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Thank you. The Urban Activation Project. One question I had before we start off is we have a list of criteria there, both in what is to be published to applicants and in our own report. But I just want to be reassured that staff have developed an objective matrix of criteria against which applications will be assessed. In other words, there's not just a whole list of descriptions and people talk about what feels good. There's actually an appropriate assessment matrix. Ms. Dixon? Right, so when would councillors see that?
Through the Chair, I'm just thinking about timeframes. Were you wanting it to come back to Council for endorsement, or was it more for information to be circulated outside the meeting?
More for information to be circulated, I'd suggest. But one would think if the criteria have been developed in general terms, then we wouldn't be far off having such a matrix having been prepared. So I suggest elected members would be interested to receive it.
Through the Chair, yeah, we can certainly circulate that to members and could get that to members within the next fortnight, I would assume, would be realistic.
All right, thank you for that. So, Councillor Hull to move.
Yes, happy to move that, and I welcome your comments, Mr. Mayor, because you and I did take the time to meet with staff about this issue, and I thought that the virtues of that matrix you referred to were really important. We did refer to other councils going down this path and maybe regretting some of the initiatives they took. And if I could dare to mention it, the Hyde Park Tavern fiasco, which the media quite rightly reported on. We want to avoid that. And the matrix is as much a risk assessment matrix as anything else, in terms of how we go forward with this, so we continue to retain community confidence in the project, continue to actually maintain community understanding about the project. Because, Mr. Mayor, compared to when I first came here all those years ago, our outlook was to get footpaths done, because there weren't any footpaths. And I lived for the day to actually be involved in something like this that could lift the community, a nice project. You know, we had enough money, we didn't have to worry about the fundamentals of just building footpaths and basic infrastructure. This is great stuff. This is a great time to be on council to actually even consider this. And above all, Mr. Mayor, as I said to staff earlier tonight, I want to see us create places where our people will feel comfortable to go and have a coffee, to recreate, to actually enjoy some sit-down leisure time in a comfortable environment. They should not have to go to an adjoining council to obtain that, Mr. Mayor. That's,
That's the strongest point I would like to make. And if these are actually projects and prototypes, let's see how it goes. Let's see if we can improve it. Let's see if we can spread it to the one end of the city to the other. Because unfortunately, apart from Westfield Marion and a few other odd spots around the city, not odd in terms of being peculiar, but just in terms of geographical location, there are not many places for us to go to have an enjoyable coffee. I know Councillor Gard has a favourite haunt down at Holfast Bay, where I met him once, and I like going there as well. But I resent having to go outside of our boundaries to find somewhere decent to have a coffee or a cake. So, you know, this is all about building community capacity and providing much work for our new staff member to sink his teeth into, pick it up and run with it.
Is that seconded? Councillor Pryor? I need to speak. Anyone against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. So, we now move to the Council Assessment Panel, so, page 302. So, members, you get the basic drift of it. We're going from our 7-member panel. According to state legislation, we're going down to a 5-member panel. There's an elected member and potentially a deputy member to be appointed from council elected members and at least 4 expert or independent members. So instead of what we've had of 4 and 3 on the DAP, it's 4 and 1 on the CAP. So we've had the matter considered just a very short time ago by the Review and Selection Committee, and indeed, my apologies, that's why I was late starting the meeting. So if you look at the first recommended motion, members, this has come directly after a lengthy discussion, I might add, at the Review and Selection Committee. And the recommendation was to leave 1 position for an elected member and 4 positions to be filled by independent members, and they would be appointed until 1st of July 2019. So that gives time for the 4 of them to operate. At that time, we may choose to stagger the terms of the CAP in the way that we have done with the DAP, having 2 appointed each year for 2 years, or we may want to reappoint them all. We can cross that decision, or the new council can cross that decision when they get there. The concept of a deputy is available for independent members as well, and the Review and Selection Committee thought that if we had 1 deputy independent member, if someone is sick, someone's travelling, someone can't make a meeting, that floating person, so to speak, can fill the vacancy for that night. You can have more than 1, but then you think, how many deputies do you need? It's really just 1 replacement person in case one of your people's away. Your quorum is 3, I believe, out of 5. So if you've got one away, certainly handy to have someone call in, whereas we don't have that capacity at the current moment. And the same thing, as I said, for the elected member as well. So if you follow that through, we're keeping the remuneration the same as it has been. It's not going up. If you accept the recommendations, then we would have ask for nominations for an elected member and that person to have a deputy. The rest is pretty straightforward. Councillor Gard, a question?
A question, yes. Should we not put the period for each payment being per meeting? It's not terribly clear whether it might be annual or weekly or monthly or per meeting.
Fair enough. It is per meeting.
Yep.
So
that's for 3 and 4.
Could that be added in paragraph 3 please. And because whoever moves it, that's a sensible clarification.
Four as well?
Three and four, correct. Yep. So they'll be in three places. Yeah, actually, inside the brackets makes sense, doesn't it? Yep. Thank you for that. Okay, so look, in terms of a motion, I suppose, can I have someone suspend standing orders for a moment? Councillor Westwood, seconded Councillor Gard. Is that carried? Yes, that's carried. The reason I do that is so that we can seek nominations, etc., because if we sort that out, then we can actually fill the gaps in for Mr. X or Mrs. X or whatever in the motion. Ms. McKenzie, are you happy with that? Yep. So, standing orders have been suspended, so I'm really just after nominations. Now, I do note that we haven't put the period in there, but if it's consistent with the independent members in paragraph 2, it would end up being to 1st of July 2019, so a bit under a two-year term. Of course, it is rather predicated on the person continuing past the council election, but I would suggest that rather than having a person expire at the time of the election and then the new council having to immediately appoint someone, I can actually just see practical problems with that. I suggest it's better to have a period going through that. And, hey, if somebody is no longer a councillor, you've got a casual vacancy, it can be fixed up. But at least you've got a member and a deputy, and hopefully through that you've got enough people to get through the tangle of the election, if you see what I mean. So I would suggest for people who are at least intending to go post-election, do I have nominations for the elected member position? Councillor Byron, nominating yourself, very good. Councillor Westwood, nominating yourself, yes, we have two. Councillor Hutchinson?
I wanted to nominate for the deputy.
Haven't got to it yet, but keep you in mind. First off the mark. Any others for the elected member position? Councillor Hull? Are you nominating yourself, Councillor Hull? Yep, we've got three. I can see you're relying on one vote, that's good. Councillor Blescu? Yes?
I don't recall that the deputy was necessarily an elected member. I thought it might have been from our discussion.
Councillor, there are two deputies, sense. Okay. The professional members can have a deputy, or indeed more, but we're suggesting, or the committee suggested one. The elected member, separate category, also gets a deputy. Can only be, I think, only one deputy for that one position. So that's what we're after. So I've got three nominations. Last call for nominations for the elected member position. Now, effectively as returning officer, I think the fairest thing is to run that election first and then come back to the question of deputy member. So I take on board Councillor Hutchinson's expression of interest, but I think we deal with them one at a time. So, members, you have three nominations, and does everyone have one, no more than one, voting slip with them? Then put down your nominations. Can I just have some guidance from Ms. McKenzie as to how many votes? It is printed there, but in case you can't read English, Ms. McKenzie, please give some advice.
Through the chair, as there is one position, you must place at least one name on the ballot paper. The preferences are your first preference, obviously, in number one, and your third, and then continuing on one, two, and three.
Thank you. That's good. Actually, it's the advisory member. What's this called? An expert member, whatever. The advising sort of member that can be called from time to time. I do think that... No, outside. Yeah, if I can see it here, where's the... is that actually included in this motion? I just can't see it this minute. But anyway, I believe that that member is only called on from time to time, and presumably that person will have expert knowledge in certain areas or whatever, but obviously being called an expert, that's why they're there to advise, and I believe they should be paid $500 rather than $4. One of the reasons being, of course, that they will only be called occasionally. And I think to call someone in occasionally, $400, the same as the rest of the members, is not reasonable.
I'll just ask for staff's clarification. Are we talking about the person in item four, or are we talking about someone else?
Through the chair, if I can just clarify as well, we've just realised there's a resolution missing. So currently on the screen, resolution 3 talks around the remuneration for the deputy members or additional members. We should have an additional resolution in those groupings, which is the remuneration for the CAP members, and it's recommended at $500 per meeting. Is it number 4? That's for the specialist members.
My question was. Councillor Westwood has very acutely picked up that there are external specialist consultants, if you like, who can be brought in on particular issues, and he's saying they should be paid more. I was then asking, is that the specialist referred to in motion 4 as recommended that person, or is the specialist meant to refer to the independent members?
Through the chair, that is the specialist members. And apologies, we're missing a resolution that we can get Tori to type up, which is payment for the CAP members, the presiding member, and the independent members. And
can the full wording be passed to the
Mr. Mayor, sorry. The actual term is professional advisor. I think I've got from my notes is what we're after.
Can I ask for probably Mr. Katanar to just clarify the terminology? Is it professional advisor, specialist, or something else? Or Mr. Topley? Handball down the line, that's fine.
Sorry about that. Resolution 4 relates to, a specialist member. So that is an instance where the CAP might be dealing with a particularly complex development and they feel that they would like additional expert advice in a particular field, and they would then bring in that particular expert to sit in on that meeting. They don't have voting rights, but they would otherwise provide advice and assessment advice, if you like, to the panel for their decision-making.
Mr. Toakley, is it correct to call them members then? Or are they really being brought in? They're not members of the panel, are they?
I believe
that's the point Councillor Westwood was making.
Thank you. I believe in the Act they actually refer to or in the regulations, I can't remember which, as professional advisor. So that's not termed as a member there. So I think it's quite consistent, Mr. Mayor, with your thoughts that it not be called a member, that person not be called a member. A professional advisor, I think, would be sufficient.
Waiting to hear back from staff on that.
Sorry, yes, concur with that suggestion, Councillor Westwood.
So in paragraph 4, that should be professional advisors. Now, Councillor Westwood thinks that should be 500 per meeting, and I'm happy to give him the motion to move in a moment, so perhaps we'll put it at 500 and can always be the subject of amendment if people disagree. Order, just one by one, I just want to inform members that Councillor Byram won the ballot, so in paragraph 2, we should put the name Byram. Now, Councillor Hull and Councillor Telfer.
Two questions. Just to reassure me, going forward with the cap, this will be an open forum, and one thing going back to
I think they're in the terms of reference. Would someone like to confirm? Or they're either in the terms of reference or the legislation. Mr. Toakley?
Through the Mayor, it is identified in the terms of reference. It is still, as the Development Act allows, the determination of the CAP or the DAP to choose how they hold their meetings. But that would be something for the CAP to resolve on their first meeting.
Ms. McKenzie?
Through the Chair, yes, for Councillor Byram, as she is the nomination, she would have a conflict of interest in that matter because she would be receiving a pecuniary interest.
Well, I'd suggest not those who nominate, only those who are elected to the position. We do have to do that before we vote, but we're working through it. Thank you, Councillor Hull. Councillor Telfer?
My question is about the clause 4, endorses the remuneration of professional advisers is consistent with that of elect independent members, but there's a different amount there. And my question is that if a professional adviser comes in, they are, through you to staff, they are likely to come in on a particular matter, not for a complete meeting. Would that be correct?
That's most likely the case. They'd be there for one item only.
So, therefore, I don't concur with...
Councillor Westwood, having heard that bit of information, do you want to revert back to the 400?
I'm happy for the council to do whatever it wants, actually. So,
I was going to suggest you move the motion, but you don't have to.
No, I'm happy as we've actually suspended procedures that we just change it before we actually move the motion.
All right. Let's have a straw poll on that item, 400 or 500, for experts brought in to advise on complex matters. All those in favour of 400? All those in favour of 500? All right, let's have 400 in the motion. Thank you. We should get on with the deputy member position. Councillor Pryor, what have you got?
Yeah, just a quick question about how is decided upon the need for an independent, professional advisor? And, I mean, could we be in the hole for three or four professional advisors in a night?
I think it's going to be up to the cap. Mr. Totley, do you want to advise?
Through the Mayor, yes, that's the case. It would be a decision of the cap where they may, upon receiving the agenda, may wish to call that advice, but I would suspect it would be on fairly rare instances.
So, yes, we're really just relying on the good sense of the cap, and presumably in the budget for the cap, a little bit of stretch needs to be allowed for the rare occasion upon which people are called in. Deputy member on the panel, I've had one expression of interest. Are there any others? There being no others, I find that Councillor Hutchinson is, is the person to be named in the motion as deputy member. That's about all I can really say. So that we have that right. Now, I've got a question myself, and it's about the delegations. Right, it's in paragraph 6 in terms of what's in front of me. Now, there have been some changes to delegations, and the delegations tend toward giving more to staff and less to the cap. There are two areas of concern that I have. The first... in fact, that if you look on page 306 and page 307, that's where it talks about delegations. Item number one, development that has been the subject of Category 2 or 3 public notification. So you're talking about something that's non-complying, I think. There have been objections, and if the objections can't be satisfied by conditions or modifications, then it goes to staff, not the cap. Now, I suppose the problem I have with that is that we never get to see it publicly, and we don't know how that modification practice has been undertaken, and whether, indeed, the third party is really satisfied with the conditions. So could I have a staff response to that, Mr. Tugley?
Through the Mayor, thank you. The part of the delegation that you quoted then is the current existing delegation that has been to staff for some time. It is the second half, if you like, of that paragraph that is the suggested amendment.
Well, hang on, it says modify, so how can it be the same as as what it is now?
Through your worship, the modifications to the first section of that delegation remains unchanged. The additional component to that reads, other than where the representor or representors have identified they do wish to appear before the panel, so present in person to the panel, or where concerns raised in a representation, in the opinion of the Manager of Development Regulatory Services, relate solely to elements of the proposal that comply with the development plan policy applicable for that development. So what that delegation goes on to say is, in their third-party submission, in their statement of representation, if they express a desire to be heard before the development assessment panel, then they will have that opportunity. Where the staff delegation kicks in again is if it's a situation where it's a new dwelling, and the development plan prescribes that that dwelling requires two on-site car parking spaces, and a third-party representor has expressed a concern with on-site parking and expresses a view that there is insufficient on-site parking. It gives staff the ability to then say, the proposed development actually meets the development plan policies with respect to the nature of the representor's objection. Thereby, there is no need to then present that to the panel and extend the decision-making process on that application. So that determination would rest with myself to make that decision.
Right. So I stand corrected that the item on page 306, that's the current one, and the paragraph in bold on page 307, that's the addition to the current. Now, I still have a concern about a representor who says, I object to all of these things, it's a terrible development, I don't trust staff to do it, I want it to go to the DAP, but I don't want to appear before the panel. That person will find it goes back to staff for decision, rather than going to the CAP. So, the problem I have with it is that that factor can be determined by the reticence of the objector, not the lack of validity of their objections. What does staff say to that?
Thank you, Mayor. No, if the representor raises concerns that are applicable and raises areas of the proposal that doesn't meet the development plan, then that application is delegated to the panel. It would be only in instances where those objections relate to elements of the proposal that entirely comply with the development plan. So as Mr. Kattner raised earlier, if someone said insufficient on-site car parking, but it satisfied that criteria and that was their only concern, that could be a delegated decision for staff. But if they then raised issues such as front setback and it was set back at 5 metres and it should be 8, well then it still then would be a delegation to the panel.
Well, Mr. Tokley, with respect, I don't think that's what it says, because you've got that word or that comes after the brackets. So it's a category 2 or 3, so that sort of suggests it's non-complying anyway. And then it says it will go to staff effectively if it can't be satisfied. Sorry, it will go to the CAP if it can't be satisfied by conditions or modifications to the parties. Doesn't that say it will also go to the CAP if the representor has identified they do not wish to appear before the panel? And then there's another category where concerns raised relate to complying aspects.
Through your worship, yes, so the first qualifier is, so the first test, if you like, is in their statement of representation. If the representor has not expressed a desire to be heard, then that application need not go to the development assessment panel. So that's the first test. If the representor has expressed a desire to be heard, then it will go to the development assessment panel, to the CAP for a decision. The second test being where those concerns in the opinion of the manager can be or relate solely to elements of the proposal that either meet the development plan or can be satisfied by a condition, then it need not go to the CAP for a decision. So again, to explain the car parking situation, if a representor expressed concerns about insufficient on-site parking, but also expressed some concerns about noise, now the development plan has some prescriptive criteria around car parking. If that application met the prescribed criteria for on-site car parking, then that issue would be struck out and be satisfied, therefore not needing to be put to the CAP. However, because I've expressed a second concern, which relates to noise, if that concern around noise doesn't meet the development plan criteria, performance criteria, then that issue cannot be satisfied by the development plan and would need to go to the CAP for a decision.
Well, I find that paragraph, with its various alternatives and exceptions to the exceptions, virtually impossible to comprehend, I have to say. I wonder if, and I've got another one, which is in relation to signs. That's on page 308. What I'm getting to is that perhaps this particular motion could neatly be excised from the motion if members are happy, and that we simply bring it back at the end of September.
It's I think it's a bit of a curly one. The other one that I'd ask staff to think about in the meantime, on page 308, when you're talking about signs, 10 metre, where they exceed 10 metre square in area, I wonder if that should be each side when double-sided, or whether it should be either side when double-sided, because I'd invite staff to think about the situation where it's 1 metre square on one side and 12 metre square on the other side. Now, that wouldn't be caught by that delegation. And also, in relation to additions to existing signage, aren't we trying to say where the proposed additions exceed 10 metre square in total? In other words, if you have a 5 metre and then you add 6 metre square onto it, isn't that what you're trying to attack, rather than something that in itself is 10? I'm not explaining it very well. I'm doing it on the run. But the other one that I wonder if it's just strong enough, that the illuminated advertisements talks about DIPTI raising opposition to the proposal. I would probably want to I just wonder whether that's I wonder how the department, whether they raise opposition, how they communicate that. Do they express concern? Do they raise opposition? Is it as black and white as that? I'm not sure. So just think probably I know I raised it very briefly before the meeting, but didn't go into it in enough detail. We ran out of time. But perhaps if members are agreeable, we take out that paragraph 6. We can come back with a much more concise report at the end of the month. Staff seem agreeable. Now, is that a question, Councillor Hull?
I'd like to welcome your contribution to this, Mr. Mayor, because, you know, you've cited potential for loopholes. Not that the staff have intended this, but, you know, you can perceive that there's possible loopholes there. There's possible lack of clarity in what's being put to us tonight. So I would welcome that to be tightened up so we actually do know what the consequences
are. All right.
Any
other point you wanted to make at the moment before we get into the motion?
The other thing is, getting back to the open cap?
Yes.
I would like to see, be reassured that when we will have an open cap.
How much, you've been reassured already, how much more do you want?
Well, you've just reinforced that, Mr. Mayor, so I'll leave it there.
I think it's pretty safe. I resume standing orders, so I'm after a mover of a motion. Councillor Westwood, you've got the call, if you wish.
Okay, I might as well put my name in it. Thank you. I'll move it.
Thank you. And did you have anything to add to your submissions?
Sorry?
Anything you wish to add?
I'm sorry, this is a clarification. Were you suggesting that we actually defer those paragraphs that you had doubt with about?
Yes, or? And the staff have cooperated with that, and they've taken out that delegation business to deal with later. Thanks.
All right. No, I don't have much. I'll just say something, and that is that, of course, this is going to be a very interesting developments with CAP. It should be rather historic, and let's see how well it works compared to the old system. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Kerry, anything to add? Anyone against? Then I'll move the motion. I'll put the motion, rather. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you, members. Thanks for the clarification. Right, Southern Innovation Area. Well, it can just be brought back. Huh? It was page 248 members. Now, I did have the opportunity to discuss with Mr. Katanar, our new planning chief, and I welcome him, by the way. He's certainly come at a great time. probably gets to clock up a bit of overtime this week. And like the other staff, there's a huge amount of work that's been done for this agenda tonight, and I'm very grateful for that. Now, with the one of the... I suppose there were a few issues that I'd raised in discussions prior to the meeting. One was about the area where the Southern Innovation Area DPA interacts with Sturt. There's the expressway, and then there are residences on the western side of the expressway in Sturt, south of Seacombe Road. There are there's a physio and an automotive repair place there, but it's actually zoned industrial for historical reasons. And my question now is whether, not so much in the ministerial DPA, but whether in our housing diversity DPA, we're fixing up that little bit of industrial. So although it's not directly on point, it's actually right at the interface between the two DPAs. I thought I might as well just get it out of the way, just out of concern for residents of Sturt. So would the staff like to assist?
Through His Worship, the southern little section, which is the southwestern corner, there's a, I guess, a an existing area which is currently zoned industry. The Southern Innovation Area DPA will actually consume a portion of that current industry zoning, but it actually stops at the road reserve, which is the DPTI road reserve on the on what is the western side of the Southern Expressway. I guess the remaining portion of land and allotments in that space, which are currently zoned industry, will be converted to residential zoning. So it reflects more or less the existing land uses in that area, albeit there are two non-residential land uses currently sited there.
So, it's, by the way, the best map for this is on page 301, members. So is that bit of industrial going to be fixed up?
Through Your Worship, yes. So the industry area will be zoned residential, so reflective of the existing uses in that part.
Thank you very much. Another question, and I know there's been discussion before the meeting about this. When we look at the suburban activity node zone on lot 707, that's the blue coloured lot facing Marion Road, more or less in the middle of what we call the Warraparinga area, but actually adjoining Marion Road, there's an area called the suburban activity node core area, and then there's suburban activity node zone. Now, what's the difference between the two, and what's the implication of the staff recommendation to allow, well, I suppose a different width of the core area to ensure sufficient dimensions to cater for development there, bearing in mind there's an easement along Marion Road? Sorry, that's a wordy question.
The core area has potential development constraints with some overhead power lines. It's a requirement from the technical regulator that buildings be set back at least 10 metres. Now, the heights of buildings envisaged in that area may struggle to actually achieve their maximum building height, considering the types of floor areas that are also envisaged for that zone. So the comments back to the Minister are that the width of that core area should be made a little bit wider so that the building heights that are actually envisaged can be achieved without coming into conflict with those overhead power lines.
So in plain language, you're asking, or you're recommending, more of a setback, are you?
Through Your Worship, not an increased setback for buildings. Well, an increased setback for the buildings, which is a requirement of the technical regulator, but that core area to be made wider. So it's a strip of land currently, say, that wide as a demonstration, making it deeper, so it will actually extend deeper into the suburban activity node zone to allow for the required setback from the power lines.
I think that's a yes, but what do you mean by the core area then? Why is it called the core area?
Through the Mayor, the core area envisages different building heights and different land uses to the other areas of the suburban activity node zone. So the core area envisages up to 6-storey buildings, whereas the remaining area envisages up to 4 storeys. There's also different maximum floor areas for non-residential uses in the core area versus the other areas of the suburban activity node zone. I'd also like to point out that on the map that you're looking at, it does illustrate the depth of the core area on lot 707 from Marion Road, whereas the actual beginning of the allotment is less than half of that depth shown. So there is very limited depth available for future development on lot 707, looking at the indicative plans that DIPTI have provided.
So the recommendation is actually a pro-development suggestion, in the sense that if you can't do your 6-storey right on Marion Road because of the power lines, give yourselves a bit of room inland of that to have your 6 storeys. Is that the idea?
It's saying that the indicative core area would not be feasible to build the forms of development that are envisaged in the core area of the suburban activity node zone. So it's bringing that issue to DIPTI's attention.
So is that a yes?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but we actually need... I love your work, it's very thorough, there's no doubt it's technically accurate, but we actually need things expressed in plain language tonight for a lot of these issues that we're going to be dealing with. So please bear in mind you're dealing with mere mortals, and we're trying to understand some of these technicalities. So thanks for that. Now, Alawuna Avenue, I know, is another point of concern, but perhaps I could just ask Councillor Telfer or Councillor Hutchinson, do you have any concerns about that?
I have real concerns about what DIPTI have proposed. That is, beside a whole suburb of one-storey buildings, proposed a thin stoop of 6 storeys. I find it quite an irony when Marion Road, it is suggested, be 3 storeys. So I concur with what staff has suggested, that it is the other zone or transit zone rather than the core zone, because to have 6 storeys along there would ruin the whole interface and connectivity between the two parts of the suburb.
Could I just be reminded of what was staff's recommendation in relation to that? I see, reviewing the designation of Alawuna Avenue as core area. You'll see that series of dot points, members. That's where all these recommendations are. I just wonder if should it be stronger language then, rather than asking them to review the designation, or do we just assume that DIPTI will know what that means? In other words, is there actually a more preferable zone that we could actively suggest to them? I would ask staff, taking into account Councillor Telfer's concern.
Through the Mayor, I think staff are of the opinion that it would be more suitably zoned as other area of the suburban activity node zone, so perhaps that could be clarified in the response to the Minister.
All right. Councillor Telfer, would that satisfy that concern of yours in the short term?
It does. I've talked to the property manager of Junction, and I'm assured that in their work on behalf of the Housing SA, they would be not ever building more than three storeys because of the nature of the community there.
Councillors, before we get into it, any other questions, clarification required? Councillor Telfer?
Do staff believe that the open space section through Warraparinga is wide enough for appropriate biodiversity?
Ms. Dixon? Who's going to help us with that?
Through the Chair, there is recommendations for just locating the appropriate map. So on page 266, members have a look there. There's a proposal to expand that the green corridor to the east, sort of southeast. You can see that shaded yellow bit through there. And then to the bottom of the map on page 266, there's the shaded area there between the express, where the expressway is coming down as well, and just butting up to where Hungry Jack's is. Yep. So there has been recommendations to expand that area.
And my question is that sufficient for a biodiversity corridor?
So through the Chair, we had a range of staff, including staff from our environmental area, to comment on there. We are constrained in that it is also in a residential, abutting residential areas, but what we've sought to do is where we can maximise that and retain and support the existing corridor that we're putting forward that recommendation.
Yes, I note in the recommendations the fifth point, expanding the open space zone to encompass adjacent areas of mature vegetation, and also the next one, ensuring new medium high density development envisaged in Leffers Triangle respects the environmental and cultural value of the Warraparinga Kaurna Land and State Heritage Place. I suppose another way of asking the same question, perhaps, but is it actually possible to do that if you're going to have high-density development where it's proposed? Any more from staff on that?
Through the Mayor, I think staff are raising concern about the impact that medium to high density would have on the Warraparinga area and the cultural and environmental value of that area. We have concerns about whether that is achievable, but I think that is a matter that would be best considered by DIPTI in reviewing the various submissions that they receive.
Okay. So, Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I've got a quick question about the zoning along Alawuna and how that goes hand in hand with our plans for streetscaping along there. Has anybody considered that?
Well, just bearing in mind that we've already put off the streetscaping plans in the short term at least because of
likely redevelopment in the next few years. Would staff like to add to that?
So I think our main comments with the zoning around Alawarina is to ensure that it eases in and complements existing residential, and then also recognises that will be an entry boulevard into Tomsley as well. So support of that, but also how it transitions into the surrounding residential areas. So I don't know if I've answered the question exactly. So it was a question around the streetscape.
Yeah, what are the implications?
I think that would work well. It's looking for a zone that allows to activate that street interface with the community as well. So we think that will work. And then the other concern really was how it then connects to the residential area around that. So it should work.
Okay, Councillor Gard, then Councillor Hull, with questions.
Your Worship, yes, one of my favourite subjects at times like this is traffic in an area, any one area such as this, and matters such as egress from these industrial or semi-industrial or commercial zones. We do know that the Marion Road, Sturt Road area is one of the worst. I think that intersection is the worst for accidents, but further to that, we have had some terrible log jams of traffic there in the last few years, I think probably due to poor traffic light management as much as other things. However, we're looking at a very large increase in worker population in this area. I'm just interested to know if there has been any prediction made through DIPTI of the effect of such zoning, and if DIPTI would be, if it has been, have DIPTI reacted in any particular way? And a perfect example might be grade separation at Marion Road, Sturt Road intersection. But another issue, and I've made this point before, in relation to the need for ramping further up the soon, or one day to be, north-south corridor, further ramping in the Shido Park, Trot Park area onto the expressway to avert log jams in the Darlington-Tonsley area. So I see emerging quite an issue as far as the mixture of industry, commerce and traffic is concerned over the next 10 years.
Comment?
Through His Worship, we've not heard any indication from DIPTI about any research or investigation they have done with respect to the traffic management. It might be something that could be noted and brought to their attention that Council's concerned about those impacts also.
Through the Chair, I would assume that wider traffic analysis has also been taken into consideration with the Darlington upgrade around that area and the connecting roads.
We'd hope so. Councillor Hull.
So could you bring that to a question, please, Councillor Hull?
Through the Chair, as indicated before, we are constrained with the development that's had occurred around that area. So where we can, we've proposed that we can expand the open space. It's probably also worth noting that in the area this DPA moves into Mitcham Council, there is expansion of open space along that green corridor. So is that a map in the... Yep, on page, do we know what page? On page 301, if you look, there's an extension of the green corridor as well.
All right.
Luna, now, last night we had a briefing by staff. I thought that even listening was worthwhile. Staff were reflecting, and rightly so, on Churchill Road as not a best case scenario for higher density living. What's proposed with Alawuna is not dissimilar. In terms of our streetscaping, and I think that's a fail by that local council in, to activate the area to do appropriate streetscaping and make it more less concrete and more conducive with human beings frequent in the area. To get back to Councillor Pryor's question, can we not start to foresee the need to have streetscaping tailored to the type of development that we're actually now going to put in there, whether it be 5, 6 or 8 storey? I don't think it really makes much difference. So I think we need to actually start to anticipate the planning, the juncture of planning and streetscaping issues.
Isn't that really a question for the streetscaping coming after the development? Councillor Hull?
Well, no, I think we can anticipate what type of streetscaping we need with the built form that's actually in the area.
I'll ask Ms Dixon to respond, or Mr Katnar. Mr Katnar.
Through His Worship, I take your question as meaning Council, I guess, getting on the front foot and creating a brand for that precinct, and it might be in the shape of the elected body having some conversations around what sort of footpathing treatments, what sort of street furniture, and in this zoning, if it's converted to other, it makes for the provision of shops and other offices at ground floor. So what sort of outdoor activities might be permitted, outdoor dining, for instance, might be one. So while development will come at some point, there might be some sort of motherhood guiding statements that can be a reference point for anyone looking to acquire land along Alawuna Avenue to then be informed about how council might then furnish the streetscape with infrastructure.
Comments are pleasing. They really are, sir. And I think with our new activation person, that could be an interesting mix of minds to get the outcome we want.
Mr Skull would like to contribute.
Working with Junction Australia, who will be taking over about two-thirds of Alawuna and doing their development, and Mr Lyons has been working with them already, and we will be in the future on the streetscape that we put in, which will complement their development. So everything that Mr Katnar said is going to be discussed in detail with Junction Australia, because they want it to work as well.
Councillor Pryor.
Quickly, Mr Mayor. The Churchill Road demonstration site, where people literally drive in and close that roller door behind them and leave the concrete starkness outside, is not what we want.
Thank you.
Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, agreed. And it just raises another question. The provision for shops and office space and that sort of stuff, but not the requirement for that sort of stuff. So, I mean, I wonder, I'm not familiar with the actual zoning that we're proposing with other, but I mean, if you have a shop and then two residences and another shop and then another two residences, that's not going to make a nice streetscape, I don't think. Whereas if you have, you know, say all shops along the bottom floor, that's something we can work with. And that was kind of where my question was angling, where, you know, what do we want to happen there? And is the policy actually reflecting what we want to happen there?
Certainly there was talk about mixed use, for example. I suppose another way of approaching it is the other zone, which is notoriously undescriptive. What does that actually mean?
Staff are just looking that up at the moment.
Through the chair, you'll see in on page 282, which is staff's proposed changes to the suburban activity node zone. Principle 16 specifies that the ground floor of buildings should be built to minimum ceiling heights to enable conversion to non-residential uses in the future if the market isn't there at the moment when they're built. But obviously by changing Alawuna to an other area, that provision would no longer apply. So it might be something worthwhile noting in our submission that while we may not be supportive of the building heights along Alawuna Avenue as a core area, DIPT should be cognizant that we want to encourage non-residential ground floor uses and to encourage sufficient floor areas and other provisions.
Yeah, and if we're going to do that, we want to discourage ground floor residential as well. So, I mean, they're both important.
How do we do that? Is the question to staff?
Through your worship, typically there will be, envisaged development for a particular zone or policy area. So it's about then looking at the assessment criteria and seeing how that development does or doesn't fit within the envisaged development criteria. What we'll need to, look at in detail is, as was the case that we discussed last night along Churchill Road, being able to apply discount or dispensation for doing X, Y, and Z, and then converting ground floor to other types of uses. So we need to stress to DIPT that we would strongly discourage any sort of dispensation given to remove any ground floor commercial component in favour of other benefits the development may provide.
But are we doing that in the proposed response as it stands?
Through the Mayor, no, I don't believe we are, and it could be strengthened in the submission.
Members, what I'm thinking is that the motion actually has something like substantially, in other words, that the letter that's been drafted, which you find on page 292, just arising from the discussion, there probably needs to be scope for a little bit of finesse in the letter. Come back to that when we deal with the motion. I've got a question. There's a wonderful list on page 253 of what the staff have recommended, and I agree with most of it. I'm confident that most of the members agree with most of it too. But it's curious to me that in the letter that's provided, the second last dot point to do with the car parking rate, something very dear to our hearts, is excluded. So it's in the recommendations in the report, but it's not in the letter. What's the reason?
Through the Mayor, I think that's just an editorial error that's arisen, so we can certainly put that dot point back into the letter.
Okay, I think we're probably ready to get into a motion. The other thing I'd say is that I find that our planning staff are extremely polite and probably quite gentle with Deputy. So I just say that in terms of the motion that's been recommended, if I was being a bit more political in the pro-community sense, I would say subject to satisfying the issues highlighted, or something slightly stronger than simply asking Deputy to, you know, have another look. Councillor Telfer, you're wanting to move something?
That was my sentiment exactly. I was going to move subject to consideration and acceptance instead of the word review, because I believe that we're not supportive of these amendments unless they're accepted. I've got that second comment to lodge that somebody else made about.
Rightio. So maybe we're still playing around with it, Councillor Telfer. Subject to accepting the suggestions highlighted in Appendix 1. What about that?
And I also believe that we should actually put all of them in the motion, that is, take that whole list from page 253 and put it in our motion so that Appendix 1 doesn't get lost and all the work that's been done getting lost.
Very well. That can be easily cut and pasted at some point. I was just clarifying, after it says Southern Innovation Area DPA, subject to accepting the suggestions highlighted in Appendix 1. Mm. Councillor Telfer, what do you think?
Well, they're not suggestions. No. They're stronger than suggestions.
Satisfying the concerns, perhaps?
Yeah. Yes. Because we're not wanting them just to review them and forget them.
Highlighted.
Yeah, and then at the end, after Appendix 2, namely, and then just we could say namely, and then list that all those dot points on page 253.
Just checking that members are comfortable with that lot 707-1.
After consultation, are the Kaurna community happy? Is the Indigenous Land Corporation generally happy? I may not be able to be completely happy, but you know, I think that's an important question to ask at this point.
I know I'm being slightly out of order here, but it's a fair question. I'm guessing that the owners would be happy with something that allows for more high-level development rather than less, because it increases the value of their land. But has there been specific consultation with the Indigenous Land Corporation in relation to Lot 707?
Through the Chair, yes, we did meet with the ILC about 3 weeks ago. Overall, they were happy with the DPA. As the Mayor indicated, they are looking to develop on Lot 707 to achieve an economic return to Kaurna, and they are working with Kaurna Yerta in this model as well. Members may remember that they're also looking to, through development on the site, also fund the Elders Village on Lot 707. Our ongoing conversations and discussions with the ILC is that we would be supportive of development that also respects the cultural and the environmental sensitivities of the site, and they are wanting to integrate that with the open space where the Living Kaurna Centre sits as well. One thing that they were concerned with and are requesting a reconsideration is the site sizes
For development, we're limiting, so they are looking potentially along with the Elders Village to seek some development around, you know, maybe having an IGA, those sort of facilities that would serve the residents in the Elders Village, could potentially would also service the needs of people utilising the caravan park. So they are requesting that those site considerations be extended, not to allow white bulky goods, but to allow larger scale developments, because I think there are 250 square metres at the moment, which is quite limiting.
Well, if this was to go ahead, would this be the biggest contribution to an Aboriginal community in metropolitan Adelaide in terms of their self-determination of the use of land that they've never had before?
I think that's getting way beyond the planning debate. I'll leave it for you to make that point in debate, Councillor Hull. At the moment, we're with Councillor Telfer. She's moved the motion. She's checking that what she wants is actually on the screen in front of us, including the parking point. Did you wish to speak further, Councillor Telfer?
I am grateful for the work that staff have done to respond to my concerns about Alawuna, about the open space, about Grace Road, where the suggestion was that you could put residential land hard against the motorway corrugated fence. And I believe that this is going forward. It is denser than we what we perhaps would want to dream for, but it is the future of our city in terms of an innovative Tonsley, a big housing development at Tonsley, and an appropriate interface nearby. I am concerned about the people in Clovelly Park South that are now being named Tonsley. I hope that they will not be landlocked in all of this. They definitely will have South Road and Sturt Road pushing them into a corner as such. So how they connect across to the rest of the Mitchell Park community is going to be extremely important. And that little group, Clovelly Park South, now called Tonsley, requires, I think, some special help because they could easily be caught in there without appropriate open space or appropriate interface with the Tonsley site. So at the moment there are fences there, and obviously we hope that there will be some transition between what will be Coles and Woolworths at the back of Tonsley and that Tonsley site. We hope that all of this is orderly building, not just a money-making by Dip Tye and the state government, but orderly development, and that they heed our concerns, because they're not just things that we might think we might like reviewed. We are serious that we don't want Alawuna six stories, that we are serious about many of those other issues that are listed there.
I find that there's a problem with the motion, Councillor Telfer, because that first part is really seeking to do two things. One, it's saying that DIPTY should be advised of our concerns and they should be satisfied, and it lists them. It also contains another intention, which is for a letter to be forwarded to DIPTY. And I think it's confusing to have them both in the one motion.
So we could have Appendix 1 of this report, namely,
exactly,
and then we can have that second
cut
phrase
that
as a number 3.
Yep. Something like these the council writes to DIPTY with these concerns.
Mm. And that would be point 3.
And the thing is, we can no longer be as specific as the letter that's been given to us, because it needs at least minor adjustment.
we leave it general, I mean, staff and the Mayor will act in good faith to express those concerns, and it'll be something very, say on the record, it'll be something very similar to the letter that you have in front of you. So, is that seconded? Councillor Hutchinson? Further debate? Anyone? Councillor Pryor?
Can I just ask a simple question? I think it's simple. The suburban activity node zone for lot 707, what's the minimum building height for that?
Through the chair, it's a minimum 2 storeys in the core area, and it's currently minimum 1 storey in the other area, but we're recommending that potentially that's raised to 2 storeys in the other area as well.
Okay, so the question is, is a minimum build height of 2 storeys consistent with an Aboriginal elder village?
Oh, I can answer that one. Let me answer that one. No. Dead set, no.
So that's how it's zoned.
Over to staff for further comment.
So the minimum 2 storeys was recommended really looking at the other area in South Tonsley where there is a really high development potential and you wouldn't want to underutilise sites in that area. For that reason, in the track changes, we had inserted some comment that the land on 707 might be suitable for single storey. If you give me a minute, I might be able to find it for you.
No, there's no need. I think we need to capture that somehow, and that probably needs to be put back in because an elders' village would definitely be single storey as far as I see.
So, through the chair, and Ms. Hart is just trying to locate the exact page, but we have incorporated that commentary that on the development on lot 707 would support the aged care facilities, which are 1 storey.
But it doesn't say that in our motion, does it?
Nor our zoning.
Mr. Mayor, can I suggest that with aged care that anything above 1 storey is problematic and there's fire safety and lifts required and everything because
well,
the mobility
order,
is not
order.
Great.
You can make that in make that submission in debate. Just got another question. I mean, it's certainly contentious. It's not straightforward. But I wanted to just check. Lot 707, that zoning, when I look at the table on page 252, I see that aged care is specifically taken into account in the suburban activity node zone other area, but not necessarily in the zone which covers lot 707. But I'm not sure. Is that correct?
Through the Mayor, the other area is located on lot 707 where the Elders Village is envisaged.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you. Continuing with the debate, Councillor Hull, you had some points to make?
Well, Mr. Mayor, I've got a reasonable knowledge of aged care. I've worked in it long enough. With mobility difficulties, going any higher than 1 storey is problematic unless you've got lifts and fairly significant ramps to do that. I know that the Indigenous Land Corporation weren't happy with the 2-storey requirements on the frontage. Now, I doubt very much whether they'd be happy about anything more than a single-storey requirement for the residential living for elder Aboriginal people, and obviously Indigenous people having a fairly big contact with the land may not really appreciate living on the second storey, which is It's our lifestyle imposed on them. And having attended the meetings where this has been discussed, and I did attend a meeting where the Indigenous Land Corporation was there and Kaurna Elders, I got the strong impression that single story was their preferred option to keep them close to the ground, close with that connection with the earth and the surroundings of Warrapringa. And that's one of the qualities of an aged care facility for them there is the connectivity with a significant Aboriginal site. So I would be reluctant to support anything more than a single story development for residential living at the back of the shops. I do think that the staff or DIPTI in this case putting forward a two story requirement at the front in a way is doing them a favour. That's my view, because if it's only single story, ultimately that would be limiting for any development of the site.